Picture a 25-year-old woman lying in bed at 3 p.m., still wearing last night's going-out clothes, nursing a migraine beside a mystery grilled cheese sandwich. The night before, she drunk-dialed her therapist, sobbing that she hated herself and saw no escape. That woman was drowning, and she knew it. But here's what makes this moment different from countless other rock-bottom stories. She decided to become her own lifeline. Most of us wait for rescue. We imagine some perfect mentor, partner, or opportunity will swoop in and fix what's broken. But what happens when you realize no one's coming? What if the only person who can save you is the one staring back from the mirror, the same person you've been running from your entire life? This is where real transformation begins, not with a dramatic epiphany or expensive retreat, but with a simple notepad and a devastating truth. You're going to have to parent yourself through the childhood you never got to have. Growing up in a house where deer drowned in the pool and parents waged endless marital warfare teaches you something crucial. Survival doesn't guarantee living. When your home sits on earthquake-prone, landslide-threatened ground, and your parents are too busy destroying each other to notice anything dying around them, you learn to become what therapists call a disempowered supervisor. You take on adult responsibilities while being told something's fundamentally wrong with you. It's a special kind of hell. All the burden, none of the authority. By 25, this creates a specific type of person, someone who looks functional from the outside while crumbling within. The corporate job runs smoothly, the apartment is presentable, but inside, complete devastation. The gap between public competence and private collapse becomes so wide you could fall through it, and eventually you do. Instead of waiting for rescue, you rescue yourself through what John Stewart called a series of tiny little breaks. Reparenting means identifying what nurturing you still need and systematically providing it. Trauma repair through ritual, wound healing through routine. Most resist journaling because it feels indulgent, but when you try it, something unexpected happens. Grocery lists and complaints give way to darker truths. Fears you've been outrunning appear like secret messages. You will fail. You have no good ideas. These aren't random anxieties. They're breadcrumbs leading to unhealed wounds. One morning, words about Gia emerge, the black poodle kidnapped by a neighbor after running away. A childhood trauma never mourned, now demanding attention. Journaling becomes archaeological. Admit the difficult thought, touch associated feelings, explore why it's surfacing now, commit to healing actions, and find the platinum lining in addressing issues rather than letting them fester. It creates space for dreams you haven't allowed yourself to have, your expansive mind that thinks abundantly, believes in possibility. Yet journaling alone can't heal you if you're constantly numbing what it reveals. Without substances to numb you, anxiety arrives fully formed, a knot above your left breast, migraines that scatter black dots across your vision. When you ask your perpetually calm friend her secret, she says something infuriatingly simple. "I go for a run when I'm stressed." Your anxiety feels too profound for something as mundane as exercise. You're an indoor kid with every excuse. So you buy this stupid purple sports bra and start small. Run for one song. Run from one stop sign to the next. And it works. Not because running is pleasant, but because movement breaks the harsh thought loops. Exercise becomes preventative medicine, a moving meditation forcing you out of your spinning head and into your actual body. After 6 months of feeling genuinely better, a cousin suggests daily gratitude lists. Your early entries reflect pure cynicism. This is such a waste of time. But you continue. Espresso, cold bedsheets, wet hair. Then deeper gratitudes emerge. Stranger smiles, your apartment, your health. You realize trauma and gratitude aren't mutually exclusive. 9 years later, you've written 32,850 blessings, evidence, on paper, of how much good surrounds you even in hard times. That Gollum-like voice whispering you're unlovable? That's internalized childhood criticism, born when you were told your body was wrong, pinned down for eyebrow waxing, or labeled dyslexic like it was terminal. Your mother inspecting you under harsh lighting, dyeing your hair against your wishes. These moments create an internal critic who never stops working. You confront her by writing down her judgments: fraud, wrong job, disorganized, look like a soup dumpling. Then you write a cease and desist letter, dismantling each accusation with humor and self-compassion. Laughter is the enemy of self-loathing. Defeating your inner critic creates a vacuum. You need to replace "you suck" with something affirming. So you create a physical blueprint on your door using index cards and hot pink tape. Three panels. Bottom holds sources of self-esteem. Middle contains principles. Top lists qualities you want to embody. You also write thank you notes whenever hopelessness creeps in, recalling specific shared experiences, expressing genuine thanks, sharing vulnerable feelings. You keep blank cards everywhere, like emergency medication. Growing up amid constant criticism teaches you to dismiss compliments while accepting criticism as truth. You chase validation from cold, distant people while ignoring genuine supporters. The solution? Write down your encouragers, career guides, and your absolutely not list of people who make you feel small. Keep these lists visible as reminders of who truly supports your dreams. When you grow up learning everyone is a potential enemy, you never learn friendship. But therapy reveals that the only thing that matters in the long run is the bonds you create. Friendships aren't perfect. They cycle, fight, and need distance, but they bend and grow like trees with deep roots. Be ruthless. Choose only people who lift you up. Look for kindness, confidence secure enough to celebrate your wins, self-awareness enabling mature discussions, and curiosity about your life. Growing up surrounded by expensive, unused gadgets, Japanese game systems, laser disc players, an in-home tanning bed, while basic needs went unmet, warps your relationship with money. Your parents equated stuff with happiness, yet they're deeply in debt. You witness your first repossession at 10, your mother's Mercedes towed while she protests she's too busy saving lives to pay. This chaos follows you into adulthood, where you agonize over buying necessities while paradoxically spending on destructive indulgences. You debate endlessly whether you deserve $7 lilies, your favorite flowers, symbolizing your inability to believe you deserve small pleasures that make life better. After years of financial anxiety, you develop clear principles. Buy the lilies, you deserve small pleasures. Make basic appointments and purchases. Necessities aren't burdens, but luxuries many can't afford. Never stretch beyond what you can afford. Avoid unnecessary debt. It's okay to skip expensive events. These aren't just money rules, they're declarations of self-worth. Over 2.5 years, your calming rituals pay off tremendously. You're no longer weeping in cubicles or walking around with constant anxiety. When you relocate, you seize the opportunity to create new physical routines, a chance to finally cherish your body. You develop morning rituals on your own terms, turning to powerful historical figures as aspirational icons. You organize your space beautifully, invest in quality products, and discover the luxury of self-care, burning sage, playing empowering music, taking time with your appearance. Self-kindness builds strength. Beginning your day acknowledging your power creates a potent foundation. When you treat yourself with reverence, through morning rituals, intentional preparation, affirmative self-talk, the world responds accordingly. This isn't vanity, it's recognizing your inherent worth. Challenge yourself to do one nice thing for yourself daily. You can't control how the outside world treats you, but you can decide how you treat yourself. About 18 months in, an epiphany strikes during journaling. I can be a remarkable person. You realize something shocking. You're enjoying yourself. Your sweaty workout clothes, your candle-scented apartment, your hand-calligraphed quotes, you love it all. A phrase comes through like electricity. Life is not a series of crises to be endured. Life is to be enjoyed. This isn't naive optimism, but pragmatic power. Two things can be true simultaneously. You can acknowledge pain while appreciating its lessons. Living the life you want is the least selfish thing you can do, like putting on your oxygen mask first. You must breathe to be of service. So what's your Paris? Your lilies? What symbolic victory lap will you give yourself for surviving and transforming? Too many people never truly live, playing assigned roles without questioning if they want them. But not you. There's a consciously lived life waiting, one you curate and cultivate, where you're self-aware, grateful, loving, and beloved. A life you're passionately engaged with, not just enduring. It's your turn now.